Boy, it's been so long since last week. We saw each other.
It's been a week. What are you talking about?
But yeah, we're back to talk to you about the TV that we watched.
Yeah. But before we get to that, I got to talk about something.
Uh-oh.
What's that? What you want to talk about?
I want to talk about Taco Bell.
All right.
Like, they're getting rid of the Quesarito.
I'm upset.
Yeah. It's one of John's favorites, and they got rid of it off of the main menu, but kept it as an online only.
It's because they want to, I don't know why they're doing what they're about to do now, but it's because they want people to use the app, because I never used to use the app, but when I found out that's the only way I could get that, I started using the app.
All fast food restaurants are starting to get, like, if you go to McDonald's now, they ask you, are you using the app? Like, they want you to use the app, which...
That McDonald's app is...
They're all great because...
Taco Bell's app is really good, too.
Taco Bell's...
You get free stuff all the time.
Yes, Taco Bell's and Chick-fil-A are my favorite. Mm-hmm. You earn free stuff quickly. But, like, I understand... I don't agree with them removing the Mexican pizza. Believe me, it's my favorite. But, like, when they got rid of it, I understood it because they were saying we're trying to streamline our menu to where we get, you know, we can make stuff faster. But the Quesarito includes every ingredient they already have. So I don't understand why they're getting rid of it. And it bothers me.
We went to Taco Bell the other night, and I ordered online, and then we got in the drive-thru. At one point while we were in the drive-thru, there was about 7 cars ahead of us. We waited for 15 minutes for one car to move. And then a few other cars took a long time, and I was like, I don't know what's going on here. And I don't like to just jump. I've been in customer service, you know, my whole life. I don't like to jump to the conclusion somebody's doing something wrong. But we get to the window, and it's taking forever for everything. There's 3 people at the window all yelling at the person that's making the tacos to hurry up. Like, standing there doing nothing but yelling at the other person to hurry up. I didn't call because I didn't feel like doing it.
That seems like a teachable moment.
Right, like... Yeah. If that person sucks, maybe we help him or replace them or figure something else out.
One of the people by the window, obviously, it was her job to be at the window. But the other two would just stand there. One of them was just drinking a drink, and they're just there yelling at the guy to hurry up.
So a few weeks ago,
To quote Michael Robertson, there is no I in team.
So a few weeks ago, I went to Taco Bell, and I was remembering my previous experience where if you place an order online and you say you're in the drive-thru, you can't go inside.
Yeah.
They won't let you. So I remember thinking, well, it's kind of a busy time. It's around lunchtime. I'm going to go inside to get it. So I put that I'm going to go inside to get the food. And I parked. And the door was locked.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like,
well, I guess I just go through the drive-thru. So I got in my car and drove around to the drive-thru. Sat in line for maybe 5 minutes. And then they're like, are you here for a... Did you call in the Uber order? I'm like, no, I'm not doing an Uber order. It's just I want my food. And they had packaged it like it was an Uber Eats thing. And I'm like, what are they doing? Like, just open the door and give me my – like, I don't understand what's going on.
That you see, that's the only thing that I kind of am not crazy about using the app because whenever – because I used it last week to go to Taco Bell. And I used – and, you know, when they give it to you, it's sealed. Like, there's a
– Yes.
And there was a lot of people behind me. So I just took it. I saw it was sealed. I'm like, okay. And I left. And my order was completely wrong because I couldn't check it because the bag was sealed.
I mean, you could have checked it. I think they seal it for Uber Eats to not open it.
And but, I went the one time and I did the same thing, though, and I ordered to pick up, and I got there, and it was a huge drive-thru line, and the door's locked, of course. Yeah. So I ended up, like, calling because I was like, my food's ready. I could see it on the counter. And the person who answered the phone is like, we don't have time to answer the door, sir, because we have buku orders. And I was like,
are you sitting?
That's exactly what they said. I was like, okay. But it's like at that point you've already paid for it.
Yeah.
So it's like,
so you're committed.
Yeah.
That's
where McDonald's app is good because you don't choose how you want the order until you get there and you say I'm here. Are you coming to the?
You're right.
It actually won't let you until you're close to the restaurant.
And they tell you can either go drive through, go inside, or do curbside.
And Chick-fil-A you pick beforehand, but it allows you to change.
You could change it when you get there.
Well, Chick-fil-A will do anything for you.
So I think McDonald's has the best app. I think.
That'd be an interesting. Feature.
I got a free fillet of fish the other day from my place.
There it is. Look at you. Yeah.
Can I ask you something?
What's that?
Maybe all of you guys.
What's that?
Why is it that the fillet of fish buns seem to be the softest?
They are.
They're made of yoga mats.
I mean, seriously. Like, I don't understand. Like, they look just like the cheeseburgers.
I think they're steamed.
But why are they just
doing... Do you think... Could I order a McChicken on the fillet?
You can,
I thought about asking. Like, it just
I believe you can,
It seems like it's
a different bun?
Yeah.
It looks the same.
It's pillowy.
I know what you mean, though.
But it's very soft.
But yeah, it's they steam it, if I'm not mistaken.
But why?
I don't fucking know.
I didn't, you're right.
Yeah.
I know Glenn's a big fan of the Wendy's fish sandwich.
That's a good one.
Never had it.
It's very pickle.
Oh, no, I take it back. Didn't we taste a bunch of fish sandwiches?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, it's very pickle-oriented.
I'm not a big fan of pickles, though.
I'm not
Then how do you like that one so much?
Because I get it without pickles.
I'm not really going to Wendy's anymore because the firm that I work at now, is we've currently got 2 lawsuits against Wendy's for 2 different reasons, and I'm not going there.
Damn.
Oh, I forgot to tell y'all a story I just realized.
Oh, I like stories.
I had my friend Scott, who you guys have all met. He had his wedding last Sunday, and the night before.
Congratulations, Scott!
Yeah, congratulations, Scott. But the night before, I really like in the move and everything. I seemed to have lost track of my flask, so I was like, "Well, I got to get a flask to go to his wedding." So I got off of work and went over to Total Wine, and I pull into Total Wine and I get out and I go in there and I'm looking for the flask and I can't find them. So I went over to the whiskey aisle. I was like, I got to get some whiskey anyway, so I'll, you know, probably look around. And I'm kind of standing there, like, staring at the whiskeys and just kind of looking at them. And I hear the voice of a very drunk girl who may or may not work there. And I say that because she seemed to talk to every single employee there, but she was not dressed in clothing. And so I just hear, "I love being at Total Wine at night." And she comes around the corner. So I'm staring at this whiskey, and she goes, "Can I help you find something?"
She works there?
She didn't have a uniform on.
Maybe she was off duty.
And something in my head just was like, I just came out in with a Scottish accent, and I said, "I'm looking for a flask." And she goes,
"This fucking guy.
I'll help you find one, governor."
Oh, God.
And so I was like, "Yeah, I thought they'd be around here, but I can't find them anywhere." And she goes, "Oh, my God, are you from here?" And I said, "Oh, no, actually, I'm from Edinburgh." And she goes, "Oh, my God, your accent is so sexy. Hi, I'm Emily." And puts her hand out. So, "Pleasure to meet you, Emily. What I think I'm going to do is I'm going to go look around a little bit more." And she goes, "Okay, best of luck in your endeavors."
That's a terrible story. You should have let her help you all night to see what happened.
Well, I needed to get out of there because I needed to go meet, we're having dinner. So I needed to get back where I needed to go. So I started walking around and I finally found a flask and I go to the front and she is talking to the woman behind the register and she's like, "Oh, Martha, you're the best." So I don't know if she's a regular or if she actually works there. So I have to ask my friend Dylan, who does work there, if there's a girl named Emily that works there.
So this guy, Scott, your good buddy, is he the guy who you chose over me for my engagement party?
Chose over you.
I'm just curious.
Wedding I went to.
Oh, so, okay, cool. I just wanted to give a shout out to everybody who came to my engagement party.
Yeah.
Motherfucker.
Scott's a good man. I met Scott on multiple occasions.
I'm sure he is.
Well, no, it was a tough choice.
Like, balls on the Awesome Village, and if you don't like it, you can go fuck yourself.
No, but like, if the situation had been reversed, and it was like Scott's engagement party and you guys' wedding, you know.
But anyway, any of our friends and family who listen to the podcast, thank you for coming to the engagement party. It was a delicious crawfish boil.
It was.
I can't usually have them. So my wife's allergic to crawfish, which pretty much makes me allergic to crawfish.
Let me ask you a question about this, because John asked me if there were going to be other food, because we were thinking about Sandra. Is it the crawfish?
It's the crawfish.
So let me ask you this. Like, in a boil, could she have the corn? Or
yes,
the,
yes.
So
even if it was boiled with the crawfish?
Yes. It's something that the crawfish feed on that she has reactions with.
Interesting. So, like, she can eat other shellfish?
Yeah. She's good with shrimp and crabs and lobster.
That's crazy. Wow.
Although, we have had shrimp a couple of times, and she's had a slight reaction, but sometimes she has nothing. So, I think it's, like, specifically something that
When's the last time she had crawfish? Because I know some people... Some people, like, they eventually grow out of their... Yeah.
I mean, it was maybe 2 or 3 years ago. It was... We ordered, it was on Mother's Day, in fact. We had, we went to, I forget what restaurant it was, and we had seafood gumbo, and they told us that there were no crawfish in it, but we found the crawfish in it.
Hey, maybe we have a cranberry crawfish party, and we'll see if you guys are still allergic to the things that might kill you.
Well, cranberries don't kill me, just make me itch. But, she stays away because she says, you know, I'd rather just not have crawfish than end up in the hospital, so...
But anyway, the engagement party was great. Of course, I do wish Greg was there, but I understand.
I wish I was there too. Like, it's the really weird part too is the wedding was exactly the same time as the crawfish boil. Like it started
during the day.
It was during the day. Wow. Yeah. I mean, honestly,
where did he get married?
At the balcony.
Where's that?
In Metairie.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
I mean, it's okay. A really nice venue. It's expensive. Yeah, it is. And you always, that's what we learned for our wedding. Like, you do it on Sunday, it's cheaper.
Yeah.
So when you're kind of foot in the bill, yeah.
Sunday's cheap. I think it was the cheapest, and Friday night is cheaper than Saturday night.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
But it was a very pleasant boil.
You would have enjoyed Scott's ceremony because the officiant started off with Mowage. They also Rickrolled us too. So the vows were never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down. It was very uniquely them. I was quite pleased. Got to dance a whole lot. It was,
well, congrats, fun. Scott.
Yeah, mazel tov to you, buddy.
So we talked a little bit about some things that have happened historically. Now let's talk about History of the World Part 2.
All right, Greg.
Heard good things about it.
All right, Greg, I gotta ask.
Watch the first episode and a half.
I gotta talk to Greg here. You sent me a message saying I needed to watch it. I hadn't had a chance to watch it, and then I follow Nick Kroll on Instagram, so he had posted a video of his scene from this show, which I thought was a movie. I didn't know it was a show. And I was a little bit skeptical. I watched his scene, and I was like, it's kind of okay. And like Glenn said, everything I read was like, they were just ripping it apart. But you really enjoyed it, so I'm very curious to hear your thoughts.
And you said you watched one episode?
I watched one and a half episodes. And I will say that I love Mel Brooks. I've always loved Mel Brooks. And History of the World, I think, is my favorite Mel Brooks movie.
Really? More than Spaceballs or Blazing Saddles?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'll go with...
I love them.
I'll go with Young Frankenstein.
Oh, that's another good one.
I love that one, too.
When I first fired it up, the first sketch, the General Grant one, I was kind of like, oh, if this is how it all is, I don't know that I'm...
John said the same thing.
Yeah. I didn't like the stuff with Grant. I didn't think it was very funny.
After that, though, it kind of really picked up, and I was sold.
Did you watch all of it? Because John was telling me...
No, I watched the first three.
He said it came out in two parts, like, over the course of...
All the episodes are out.
Yeah, now...
It was like two parts a night, every night for 4 days straight. So it was
and now they're all available on Hulu, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like it was... It's kind of hit or miss, but I feel like... It's not like the History of the World movie. It's like drunk history.
It, to a degree. And it's like, because even though Brooks described it, it's like sketch comedy. That's what
yeah, like when he was. When John was talking to me earlier, I was like, it sounds like it's a bunch of SNL skits. And he's like, kind of.
But there's threads that they visit back to the different
and it's
time
got a lot
periods.
More like modern kind of humor to it. The one that I did find really funny was Josh Gad as William Shakespeare.
That was hilarious.
I thought that was really funny.
I also did. I'm trying to think of the order of things. Did you get to Curb Your Judaism?
Yes, that was one of those. That one was funny, but I was telling Ryan about that. Like, if you don't watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, it's probably not funny.
Yeah, I could see that being the case.
Because it starts off as Curb Your Judaism, and it's got the music from Curb Your Enthusiasm, and they get there, and the first apostle, who I don't even know which apostle he was supposed to be, but it's Leon.
Luke.
Oh.
It's supposed to be Luke, okay? And he's sitting there eating. What was it? It was a Dolce de Leper.
Yeah.
I don't know why before you said leper on it, ice cream. And then Nick Kroll comes in and he's Judas. But it's like he's very much playing the Larry David character. And they're talking about, you know, Jesus and all the stuff that kind of aggravates them with all kind of different things. And then there's the Roman soldiers show up and Leon starts yelling that the Ro-Ro is at the door. And which was just, it was very Leon. And then the Roman soldiers kind of tell him, you know, we'll give you the 30 pieces of silver if you betray him. And he's like, well, you know, hypothetically, if I were to do this, you know, and that's when he tells him how much it'll be. And they do that thing that in Curb Your Enthusiasm, Larry David does all the time, where he kind of starts like lifting his head up and squinting at people, like trying to read the other person. And that was kind of funny, but it's funny because it was...
Yeah.
It was an inside joke.
Because it was Curb Your Enthusiasm joke. So if you don't watch that, it probably wasn't funny at all.
So I saw History of the World Part 1 like 3 or 4 times in high school. Drunk most of the time, and I loved it every time. But I don't really. It's been decades since I've seen it. So like when this was coming out, I thought to myself, should I watch the first the movie again, or just?
I don't really think you need to.
Well, it's not. It's not about need to. It's like I didn't want to like.
Don't. I would say don't watch it because I don't. Don't compare it.
Right. That was what I was worried about.
It's a spiritual successor, but to John's point, there's a lot more modern humor, and I think people who are looking at it to be like. just a direct same thing. And that's probably why a lot of critics are turned off.
Well, they said, I saw the guy who did, it was the guy from, who did, I've seen him, he's been in other stuff. The guy who was part of the creating of this one. It was,
Reynolds?
Yes.
Yeah, he's in a lot of
and he shit. Said it's not a direct, like, it's, he was, he made it his own thing. He's like, this is not Mel Brooks. I'm not trying to be like, it's just sort of like an homage to what he was doing. But I didn't want to compare it to the original at the same time, but it's been so long since I've seen it, so.
Well, give it a 3-episode try.
They're short episodes. They're like, it's like sketches. So, I mean, it's like 5-minute sketches.
Maybe we pull the Glenn rule on this. Yeah. And just give
like,
it a shot.
I'm gonna finish the season. I really
and
enjoyed
I'm,
it.
I'm probably going to finish it, too, because it's like, it's certain ones are very funny and then certain ones are not, but you don't know which one's going to come next.
It's like an SNL episode, though. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's fine, but it's not like... Mel Brooks narrates the whole thing.
Really? So he actually has something to do with this?
But it's like, but he's not like... He just kind of says like, oh, you know, the Russian Revolution. And he'll just say like a little one-sentence thing in the background. And then the skit starts.
Johnny Knoxville is Rasputin. That's what you need to know.
All right.
Oh, there is one skit where they're trying to kill Rasputin. And it's...
I can't ruin it for you. You need to see it.
All right. Well, maybe I'll give it a look.
But there's one. Okay, I didn't get the chance to watch this, and I'm really kind of curious to see because this is my favorite Arnold Schwarzenegger movie of all time. But True Lies, there's a series now.
Yes, there is. CBS.
Before Glenn talks about this, because he's the only one who saw it. When Glenn, I think it was Glenn who first told us, I didn't really, it's not that I didn't believe him. I just never heard about this. So I'm like, how could I have never heard about a TV show based on one of the most popular Schwarzenegger movies ever? Sure enough, I went looking and found it, and I watched the trailer, and I was like, this could either be decent or maybe one of the worst things ever. And I recorded it, and before I had a chance to watch it, take over, Glenn.
So, like Greg, True Lies is my favorite. It's my favorite James Cameron movie, too.
Really?
That's an interesting little, Glenn, little tidbit.
It is. I loved it in high school, in fact. Shout out to Mr. Begg. I did a report on True Lies. And when I was,
that's why I love Mr. Begg.
Yeah.
You got to do a report on True Lies.
I did. I had to pick any movie that I wanted to do, and I did True Lies. And he told me, okay, and he gave me a list of James Bond movies to compare it to and stuff. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, and I had such a good time. And Jamie Lee Curtis just won an Oscar. But, you know, that for a while she said that was her favorite character she'd ever played. So
I love it.
Yeah. So anyway, so I have some history with the True Lies brand. So when I heard that CBS was making a TV series version of True Lies, I was cautiously optimistic, I guess. It stars Steve Howie. As Harry.
Who's Kevin from Shameless, who is awesome in Shameless.
Yeah, and Ginger Gonzaga, which I think she was one of the lawyers in She-Hulk.
She looks familiar.
She plays Helen. They've got two kids in this one. It's Dana, and I forget what they have a son in this one too. But so that's all. Anyway, but so Harry and Helen. Harry is by everybody and Helen and his family know he's this boring computer salesman. He goes away a lot on business. One of his coworkers tends to show up named Gibb. Tends to show up a lot.
Is it Tom Arnold?
No, it's this guy Omar Miller.
He's in the show. Like he was in the trailer at least.
He was in. Yeah, I think he must have a cameo down the way. He
was in the thing with the Rock, the football thing.
Yeah, he's been in a lot. He's been a lot of stuff.
He's been a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, he's been a lot of stuff. And usually, you know, he's pretty a funny little character actor. Yeah. The guy Omar Miller's his name. Plays Gibb. So Gibb tends to show up a lot at family functions and. Helen really doesn't like him because there's a thing where Harry's barbecuing for her coworkers and Gibb shows up and eats all the expensive cheese. And, you know, why does he always show up and y'all go talk to the side and he eats all the cheese? But what Helen doesn't know is that Harry is actually a spy for the Omega
Sector.
I know that and, movie.
Yep. And
The Last Line of Defense.
And...
Charlton Heston with an eye patch.
So, yeah, and Charlton Heston isn't in this, but they're...
Because he's dead.
That's right.
Sweet Jesus, Glenn, you surely screwed the pooch last night, didn't you?
So Beverly D'Angelo is their boss.
Oh, I love her!
Does she have an eye patch?
She does not.
One of my original
her voice is about as gravelly as
One of my original child crushes.
Yeah, so anyway. So the Omega Sector sends them out on these missions all around the world, and after, you know, he goes and Gib puts together his, like, cover, and he always goes and gets Dana Snow Globe and
Village.
Yeah, and then he usually gets the son some sort of... Wherever he goes, he gets a baseball hat of whatever sports team is around there. And
I love it.
Harry goes home. So, first few minutes, I'm like...
So okay. Far, I'm kind of excited.
Yeah, first few minutes, I was like, okay, this is pretty good. So then, like, the show actually kind of gets going. And so CBS, specifically their, like, adventure shows, there's a specific style. Like
SWAT, you talking about?
SWAT, NCIS, yeah. NCIS LA, NCIS Wi-Fi. And... That's this.
Very fake, very...
It's...
Yeah.
It's almost like they were making a new NCIS show, and they just crossed out Navy and wrote Omega Sector. It is almost... If you were to just turn it on without seeing the opening, and someone told me, hey, this is a spinoff of NCIS, this is like NCIS Spies, yeah. I'd be like, all right, I would have bought it
completely. The trailer kind of reminded me of Chuck.
It's not like Joe.
No, it didn't look like that to me.
It's and the one thing that kind of some of the charm from the original one is all right, so first off, the pilot episode, Helen finds out about everything. And it seems like the whole shtick of the show is when Helen because Helen thinks he's having an affair because he keeps disappearing with Gib. And there's all this stuff about Helen. She goes out and she does Zumba with her friends, and her friends are like, well, you know that means he's having an affair.
Wouldn't it have been better if they dragged this out?
And so Helen confronts him and's like, I think you're having an affair. And he's like, no, I was just going to surprise you with a trip to Paris, because that's where they're planning to go. So he puts her in the hotel room and he's like, you stay here. I'm going to go buy some flowers. He goes and he does his little mission or whatever. And when he comes back, they kidnap the both of them. And she finds out he's a spy, and she kicks more butt than he does because she's a Zumba.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So when the terrorists come in,
oh god.
Harry's still trying to act like he's this meek person, and she just destroys them all and says, "Come on, Harry, I could take care of this." And she wipes out a whole squad of terrorists. Mm. And he's like, "Helen, how can you do that?" And she's like, "Well, you know, I work out." And, all right,
stop talking. I can't take any.
So, but at the end of the pilot, when they bring her in, Beverly D'Angelo pretty much says, "Well, you know about the Omega Sector, so you're on the team now, and we're going to start training you next week."
At the beginning of this show.
But part of the charm, it's sort of like part of the charm of the original movie was like Jamie Lee Curtis dropping the Uzi and like wiping everybody and Arnold Schwarzenegger, is that you sort of thing? And this one, she is just like the most badass soccer mom I've ever seen in my life. And again,
everything you're just talking about was in the first episode.
Yes.
Why didn't they drag this out? Like that's almost how like the first season maybe should end.
With her finding out.
Her finding out and her being brought in.
Right. But yeah, that's True Lies. It comes on Wednesdays on CBS.
Yeah, I'm not watching.
I usually do a 3-episode rule. I saw the first one, and at the end of the first one, I'm like, I don't know if I really need 3.
If Glenn's rule is not good enough for Glenn, then I'm not watching
it. I mean, it is a rule, so I guess maybe I should go back and watch the second two. But it's,
you've already decided.
Your first instinct is always right.
It's and again, it's a shame because there's a lot of talented people in the show. Like the guy that plays Harry, Steve Howie, he's pretty good. You know, the one that plays Helen, she's fine. Beverly D'Angelo, I love the one that played Gib. He's kind of funny. It's just, I don't know, there's something that just doesn't work.
Glad I didn't watch it.
Well, one thing that works is The Reluctant Traveler. This is a show that you can watch on Apple TV. It's Eugene Levy.
Oh. I saw that on Apple TV.
And I've only watched the first episode, but basically what he describes is like I'm 75 and I've always been kind of, you know, skittish.
It's a documentary
and scared of things.
Thing?
And it's him going to different places and trying things out. And the first episode is him in Finland.
So it's like Jeff Goldblum's thing on Disney Plus.
A little bit.
Okay.
It is entertaining as all get out. The first episode in Finland, he's, of course, in the snow and it's freezing. And they go ice fishing. And he's upset at the guy who takes him ice fishing because his son is catching all the fish. And he can't catch anything. He eats reindeer meat, all kinds of things. I'm interested to see where the season goes because, you know, it's him challenging his own limitations.
Is it like just he goes to a certain country?
The episodes that I've seen so far, it looks that way.
Okay, because like Jeff Goldblum's things are titled based on what he's going to be like engaging in. So I didn't know if his was kind of like Bizarre Foods, where it's like, I'm going to Finland, I'm going to Sweden.
It seems like it's by country.
Okay.
But yeah, he kind of goes around and you know, samples the cuisine, goes through their customs. And
sounds similar to the thing Ewan McGregor did on his motorcycle.
Yeah.
A long way around.
A little bit of Bizarre Foods in it.
And I think that like there's a charm to those kind of shows because you get that person's unique take on it. You know, similar, like I this kind of reminds me a little bit of when I watched Limitless with Chris Hemsworth.
Oh yeah.
Like getting to see his personality and how he approaches things. I've always loved Eugene Levy, and to kind of have him, you know, go through this. He looks a lot like he did in Schitt's Creek. It's almost like that character.
That's funny.
Is going to do all these different experiences. I really think when I was watching, I'm like, Ryan would probably get a kick out of this.
Nice.
Love him in Splash.
He looks so young in that compared to now.
What a week I'm having.
Well, one show that did get a 3-episode rule recently from us is Picard.
Mr. Picard.
I guess
and
this is just
Ryan.
Specifically season three.
I guess this is just me, because you guys have talked about it before. But I watched season one. I loved the beginning, was tolerant of the middle, and absolutely hated the final episode. So when season two came out, I didn't go near it. And then I started to try and watch it, and then I kind of gave up. And then season three was coming out, and Glenn, we had our good friend Bruce on last week or 2 weeks ago talking about everything. And basically, you guys said you didn't need to see season two, just start season three. So I was like, I kind of felt weird about it, but at the same time, I was like, you know what? Let's just see what happens. I put it on. Oh my God. Like, you guys were not lying. It's probably my favorite thing to watch right now.
I think this is kind of what people wanted the other two seasons to be to a degree. Yeah. I don't even mean like all the other characters. I just mean like the pace of it and
It's the movie we never got.
Yeah.
I've said before, like I'm glad they're finally. I want the story of the Next Gen and in the Star Wars timeline just move forward. Star Trek. I apologize. Yeah, that's a big faux pas there.
I don't give a shit.
But anyway, like I'm glad they're moving the story forward past what happened with Next Gen. And,
you know, I find often the problem with that, and Star Wars has this issue too, why they resist it so long is because once you set this is what happens at this point, you can't go back story-wise for the canon. So I think that's why they kind of do prequels and everything. What I do love about this is we pick up with these characters later on. We go in different directions with them. And there's some things that are surprising and some things that like you have to kind of buy into and that come to make sense. Beverly... in this season has been like, I like that Tara Mathalos was like, she didn't have much to do in the other movies, so we're going to give her some stuff to do. She's been phenomenal.
Yeah.
Well, look, here's what I can tell you. Like, you two guys are like major Trekkies. John doesn't really watch Star Trek. He's watched some stuff. What I can tell you is anyone could start Picard season three, whether you are Trekkie or not, and probably be intrigued enough to watch it. Like, you don't have to know the whole history of the crew. It's that good. It's that well-defined of a show. The mystery of Beverly's son. And we still don't know this weird villain hunting him and everything. Like, it's very intriguing and very mysterious. Very Star Trek, but not like...
But I find even the revelations that I kind of guessed or saw coming, they are revealed in a very...
I know what you mean.
They hit well.
Yeah.
And there was a big revelation that I did not see coming that I completely was like, oh.
Oh, I thought about you when that happened.
Well, I can say this. You guys talked about earlier about, you know, Michael Dorn talking about wanting to do a spinoff with Worf. It needs to happen now.
A Worf and Raffi show.
It needs to happen now. Worf he's always been one of the most popular characters from the Next Gen cast, and he got even...
See, and I didn't
He get got any... even cooler.
I love that when he introduced himself to Raffi, that was one of my favorite Worf
Yes.
Films. I just love Bane to the Dora. So I'm just picturing Greg starting to announce himself Bane to the Lekanek.
It took him 20 minutes to introduce himself from who he was.
Well, the thing is, on Next Generation, Worf wasn't really my favorite character. The Klingon episodes I wasn't too majorly into.
Oh, I love the Redemption episodes.
Those were good, but like it wasn't until Deep Space Nine that they really, like, the Ferengi and the Klingons, in my mind, benefited
the
most.
I'm getting there. I haven't got the DS9 yet, but...
and your house.
Look, I can tell you, like, if you're interested in sci-fi and you just want to watch a sci-fi show, you do not need to know anything about Star Trek. You can start Picard Season 3, and you'll be good. It sounds weird, but...
And some of the acting that these characters... I mean... I mentioned the Star Trek episode, but Jonathan Frakes, I've always liked him. He's been good as Riker.
He's having a lot of fun.
He is, but he's having some emotional stuff too. Yeah, like that last stuff. Like, he hasn't acted this well, I think, maybe ever. I mean, he's a great director, and he directed the last few episodes.
And you were talking about earlier, but Todd Stashwick.
What a role that could have been a throwaway, thankless role.
And, you know, there's a part where you expect him to kind of get offed very early on. Right. I am so glad he's around.
He's sort of like the
character I think most people who aren't Trekkies would identify with.
The dipshit from Chicago?
Who'd just be like, what are you guys talking about? Like, we shouldn't be doing this. This is a really bad idea. Yeah, like, I think... people who aren't familiar with the characters would really gravitate to him.
But then, like, the stuff where he kind of dead names Seven of Nine, and he's calling her Annika Hansen, and when you find out his kind of...
His backstory with
the Borg and stuff, it's just... You don't really agree with it, but you can understand.
I'll say this also, it seems like the last episode might be a midway point for the season.
What, 8 or 10 episodes?
I think it's 10. I think they said that episode, it's the ending of, like, there's a couple of arcs.
Right, like, this arc seems to be over, so I'm very, very curious where they go, because there's still lots of questions to be asked.
And I will say, the way that they're, like, the music and everything, it's very theatrical.
And anyone who's seen, like, a Star Trek movie who maybe just had it on when they were watching HBO or something... they're going to, like, the music from the movies comes back.
Right.
Like, you talked about it in First Contact. Yeah. That theme is in this. So it's really cool. I really am enjoying it.
What about the Titan, Ryan? You like that ship?
Yeah, it's like a big-ass version of the Enterprise, but it's pretty cool.
It's a Neo-Constitution.
Oh, that makes sense then. Yeah, I like it.
Good stuff. I can't. So the pregnant pause there is because, Ryan, you also were inspired by this, so you started to dive into some other Star Trek series?
I just because I was just trying to... I couldn't get enough. And I started the original series, which I have never seen any of it. I just put it on one night. I was like, let me just see. I mean, I know it's the 60s and the effects are going to be terrible. And to a degree, they are.
Did you watch the remastered ones?
That's what I was about to get to. Like, I actually messaged Glenn. I'm like, have they redone these effects? Because they aren't as bad as I expected. And he's like, yeah, they did. So the space effects with the Enterprise look fantastic. Obviously, whenever they beam down somewhere, it looks pretty bad. Which, I mean, it's okay.
It's better than, like, Lost in Space was from
right.
Like, back
but I mean,
in the day.
It's okay. You. Look, you're watching a show from the 60s. It's a sci-fi show. You know what you're getting into.
It's a lot of back sets. Like, hey, we got a Western set. Let's figure out a way to work it in.
I'll say this. I think I'm on, like, episode 12 of the first season, which is the Menagerie two-parter.
The only two-parter in the original series.
And I'm in the middle of that. And what I can say from this, if anyone is ever curious, and look, I know Star Trek is not for everybody. But look, just give it a shot. It's charming. There's a lot of charm to Kirk's performance. William Shatner is really good.
What I find funny about it, and you tell me as someone who's, you know, you mentioned Glenn and I are big into it, but, like, I still find that series holds up.
There's a lot of themes that holds up. I think people nowadays have no attention span, but, like, so the effects and everything, and there's not a lot of action, but, like, the themes of what they're talking about... that stuff definitely holds up. And that's what kind of got me curious. Bruce talked about that before when he was sitting with us. So, yeah, it's worth watching if you got to be a sci-fi, like, nerd like us. I mean, it's not for everybody. I admit that. So,
I just remember when friend of the show, Sosa.
I didn't realize Spock was the shit.
No one ever informed me Spock was the shit.
Yeah, and so then just the other day, I decided to start
Strange New Worlds. I had no idea what it was about. I put on the first episode.
Funny that the menagerie, because
it was right around the menagerie. It's about Pike when he commanded the Enterprise. I kind of liked how what they did with the Enterprise, how they updated the effects but still maintained the old look of the Enterprise. Like, that was fantastic, graphic effects. Because it still looks like the Enterprise, but cooler some kind of way.
You've just watched one episode?
I did, just one so far. I just started.
Love that premiere.
It was good. It was good.
It's a good little morality play. It's a lot like the original series. The whole speech he gives in front of that little council about, like, this is what our planet used to be.
Yeah. I thought that was really good. I'm sort of engrossing myself in the Star Trek television world, which I have to say, like, I hope they kind of just – we talked before. I was like, are they going to do movies? I kind of hope they don't. Like, just stick to TV. Like, they're doing some good shows.
I really hope – someone had pointed out, and it was on one like a forum or something, that, I mean, based on how well Picard's going, I want a Sisko series so bad.
I'm with Ryan. I want the Worf show.
I would love to see what they would do with that. That could cross over to a lot of other people, I think, just the stuff he would come up with. Everyone loves the Klingons. Even if you don't know anything about Star Trek, everyone loves Klingons.
A sitcom.
Yeah. Why not?
House of Martok would be the name of it.
Glenjamin, you got to watch Daisy Jones and the Six. This is something I saw the trailer for this. Riley Keough's in it.
Yes, yeah. I saw
his granddaughter.
Yeah, I saw an ad for this, and I was like,
I did too. And yeah. I was
and intrigued. I didn't know what it was, and I saw that it was on Amazon, and I kind of looked up what it was, and I saw that it was a very popular novel that's being adapted into this 10-episode series on Amazon. It stars Riley Keough, which, as you mentioned, granddaughter of the king, and Sam Claflin. He's Finnick from The Hunger Games. And
was she the girl? I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
From Mad Max.
Yes. Yeah. She's in Mad Max.
I'm just trying to picture her.
Yeah, and he was Finnick from The Hunger Games, and I think he was in Peaky Blinders. Sam Claflin. This show. How to best describe this show? So, has everyone? Y'all have seen Almost Famous, right?
Yeah.
All right. So you know how Almost Famous, Cameron Kerr wrote that based on when he was a kid and he toured with the Allman Brothers.
Right.
That's what he based that on. So this show, imagine something in the vein of Almost Famous, but instead of the whole rock journalist thing, the whole premise is they're filming a retrospective on this 70s band now. But imagine instead of the Allman Brothers, they based on Fleetwood Mac. So the whole premise is this film crew, they're filming a documentary about this group called Daisy Jones and the Six that had this, they skyrocketed to fame really quickly. They had this kind of infamous performance, and then I believe it might have been at in Chicago, and after this performance they never played or toured together again, and specifically Daisy Jones has never given an interview to say why the band broke up, and this is the first interview she's ever given. So the show, it's styled where they're filming all these interviews for this documentary.
So she's like the Stevie Nicks character?
Exactly. Okay. So they're filming the interviews for this documentary, but most of the show is flashbacks to the band, you know, when they first meet, when they've had their first single, when you know, one of them gets addicted to drugs and has to go to rehab. It's they're going through the kind of the classic rock tropes.
Is this a drama?
Yeah, I would say so. The music's really cool in it. Sam Claflin, or Claflin, however you pronounce his name, he is fantastic in the show.
Is he in the band, or is he like the manager?
No, he's in the band. He's the guitar player, and he's the original main singer before they bring in...
He's Lindsey Buckingham.
Yeah, before they bring in Daisy Jones. The one that actually plays their first manager is Timothy Oliphant.
Oh.
Yeah, which he's got a massive mustache in the show. But it's really cool. The attention to detail's there. The fictional band is very good. In fact, they're so good, Amazon's releasing their albums, and they're like burning up the Billboard charts right now, apparently. But the standout here is Sam Claflin. He is fantastic as this kind of like southern rock guy, and who's the original lead singer of this band, and they're trying to convince him to, well, first, like, they change the name of the band, then they bring in this other singer, and this is a really cool show. Is it the best thing I've seen? No, but it is really cool. I would recommend that. It's on Amazon.
How many did you watch?
I watched three. I think they're doing something where they're releasing them like three episodes at a time. So it's
the Glenn rule of releasing.
Yeah, so they released the first three, and I think they released the next three. So I haven't watched the second set of three. But especially if you're a fan of like rock, like 70s rock music, this is really, really a cool show.
Sweet. Well, if you're a fan of planes disappearing, MH370, the plane that disappeared.
Yeah, so I watched the first episode of this today. Did anyone else check this out?
No, yeah.
I think my fiance might have watched this. But that one that disappeared in the...
In Malaysia?
Yeah, I didn't...
This is a Netflix documentary. Netflix,
yeah, she watched it. I did not watch it.
I just watched the first one. It caught... I remember when this happened. It caught... Like, it got my attention. I'll update y'all after I watch it. It's just, I'm curious to see how Netflix does this, considering we still don't know what happened to this damn plane. Mm-hmm. But it's, the people they interview are very compelling. It's a very interesting story. Netflix always does great with their documentaries, so I'm cautiously optimistic, and I will update you accordingly.
Nice. Well, the show has debuted, or returned, to us, and that is The Mandalorian, starring the great Pedro Pascal. And Grogu, yes.
Grogu.
So, John, you take us through where we meet right. Din Djarin.
So we meet Din Djarin after the events of Book of Boba Fett.
Which, Glenn pointed this out to me. I did not realize that if you just watched The Mandalorian, you wouldn't know what's going on.
And the thing that I found kind of funny in it was not just that, but... They had the recap. The recap was just the last season of The Mandalorian. The recap didn't have anything that you need to know from the Book of Boba Fett, which was kind of weird.
That's a little weird.
But
I guess they didn't want to throw out spoilers.
Yes. But yeah, he's back with Grogu.
I'm trying.
Grogu has gotten some Jedi training, but he came back. He came home.
And he's
there's been some kind of back and forth about how long, because. Did Dave Filoni say it was...
It was Favreau that said that the events in the show are kind of like... It's been over about 3 years. He said that Grogu was training with Luke for 2 years.
Okay.
But then Dave Filoni kind of said...
Was like, nah.
He didn't think it was that long. No. But anyway, that's not...
Whatever.
Yeah. But they're back, and he was, you know... Din Djarin was told that he is no longer a Mandalorian because he's removed his helmet by the... what are they called? The weapon maker.
The armorer.
The armorer.
Why didn't he just lie to this bitch?
And the only
like I don't understand. Like,
I mean, but my thing is he's got the Darksaber, which means he's the ruler of Mandalore. So I mean, I would just take that thing. I'd be like, you know what, bitch? Yeah. You're not a Mandalorian anymore.
And then she's like, oh, you got to bathe yourself in the waters of Mandalore. Like, oh, I did that. Fuck you. Like, I mean, I don't understand.
No, she said you got to bring her proof.
How was he gonna
take a selfie?
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be a selfie stick somewhere in that suit.
That would be hilarious.
He just can't make the duck face because, you know, the mask.
Oh, God.
Well, how would you know he's
making the duck face? But anyway, so he's trying to do what she says and go bathe in the waters of Mandalore, which they've been told is impossible because the entire planet is just poisoned now because of all the war and destruction that they had, and you can't get to the waters anymore. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to go try to find that anyway. So it starts out with him and Grogu trying to get back to Mandalore to see if any of that's true and see what they can do.
I'm a little curious because they set up this plot point early on that he's trying to get IG-11 back up and running, and he settles on an R2 unit, which is that the same R2 unit from...
I think so.
Yeah, it is. With the bad motivator. Yeah.
I thought so. But,
he didn't seem motivated.
He didn't really.
That's, he's not.
Makes sense. But yeah, like they set that up. And then there's like an appearance in this last episode of something pretty important and mythical, but it kind of... It kind of makes you kind of wonder, like. So, like at the beginning of the series, I thought like he wasn't an actual Mandalorian because he was on another planet, but it turns out no, it's just one of the like planets in the system.
Right.
So he is an actual Mandalorian. He just didn't live on the.
Well, he's a Mandalorian foundling. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought the first couple episodes were okay.
Well, we've had two.
The very set up things, I think. I got a bad feeling about Bo-Katan.
I thought she was amazing.
No, she was, but I got a bad feeling that something's going to happen with them.
Why do you keep saying like a goat?
I don't know. But like, I'm a little surprised of the whole thing with the Darksaber, because there was a moment where I felt like if she wanted it, she could have had it.
Well, but she can't take it.
She has to win it from through combat. Because he tried to give it to her at the end of the
He's like, I don't fucking want this shit.
And remember, he even said, I yield here.
Take yeah. it. But I mean, like, when she says content, like, can they just, you know, slap each other in the face and say, here you go? Or do they have to fight to the death? Like, how far do we have to go with this?
Well, because
she has to yell Expelliarmus. And then when it flies out of his hands, then she's the master of it.
Well, because, I mean, there was a line, because in the animated stuff, they just gave it to
they
her.
Did. They did.
And it was... It did not turn out well.
Well, not for
so I guess she guess didn't feel like she deserved it, and she needs to win it. That's what was set up, at least. And, I mean, we do get to see her fight a little with it, and she wields that thing a hell of a lot better than Jen.
You noticed that, right? Yeah. Like, he really can barely lift the fucking thing.
Well, by the way, are we supposed to know what the fuck that spider thing was?
No, it's a new thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just making sure. Like, I didn't... If I didn't miss
which, I kind of like that they didn't really... That thing didn't talk, and it didn't really explain what it was doing. It was just creepy.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool watching that show with my fiance, because, like, when those creatures show up in episode 2, when they go to Mandalore, she's like, do I need to know about this from the series? Like, like Clone Wars animated series? I'm like, I don't remember these fucking things. I don't know what the fuck's going on with these.
And just my prediction for the show, and because I think Bo-Katan is kind of a fan favorite, I think someone else is going to defeat Din Djarin at some point and get the Darksaber, and then she's going to defeat that person.
That would be great, but I have a bad feeling that she's going to want to take it back from him.
Well, I think she does.
But she won't, because she says she can't just take it.
No, I mean, she may challenge him, and fight him. I just have a bad feeling. But, I mean, it's the Mandalorian.
Maybe Grogu gets it and she has to take it from him.
Yeah, he's more mobile than he used to be, I'll say this.
He jumps now.
Yeah, he does move around a lot. He's still adorable as fuck.
Is it just me too, or does Amy Sedaris kind of... It's the borderline of, like, almost, like, satirical Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like, I love it, but, like...
I'm glad they didn't computer generate him so much.
Yeah.
Amy Sedaris?
No.
Well, yeah, too.
Yeah, that too.
Was she always missing the tooth?
I think so.
I don't think so.
I don't... Okay. Well, you both said something different. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I just... I kept looking at it. I'm like,
we'll have to go to the tape.
I don't remember whether she was missing a tooth before or not.
I don't know.
She maybe lost it in the great Rancor War of, you know...
Yeah, Boba Fett.
Boba Fett, yeah.
Well, if 2 years really did go by, I mean, she didn't. Doesn't look that Tatooine has the best dentist.
She hit it with a ball peen. Yeah. So another Din Djarin vehicle. I'm not caught up yet on The Last of Us, but the finale.
I haven't watched it either.
So yeah, where are you?
I'm on episode 5.
Oh, you're close.
Glenn. That's kind of where I am too.
Okay, so there's like three or four left for you guys. I'm caught up. I watched it.
Like, I like that we got new Pedro Pascal, because we were losing another Pedro
Pascal. Yeah, right? Like, the Last of Us season 1 is over.
This is the way.
Yeah, you know, The Last of Us is the whole reason they made Book of Boba Fett.
Right.
And I saw a meme that I thought was very funny and very accurate that says, if your girl watches both The Mandalorian and The Last of Us, she's not your girl, she's Pedro Pascal's girl.
I can't dispute that.
Yeah.
This show's... I enjoyed season 1. They covered a lot of ground, like... I feel like they could have stretched this out to almost 2 seasons if they really wanted to, but, like, a lot of characters get wiped out and just in 1 episode, and they just move a lot right along, and then, you know, you get to the finale, and it's all about, you know, this character trying to get, Pedro Pascal trying to get, you know, this girl to this one destination, and if he gets her there, you know, what's going to happen, what does it entail, and, it doesn't entail necessarily, I think, what everyone thought. I don't want to spoil it because y'all haven't seen it, but I enjoyed it. There were some, and we talked about this before, some character discrepancies with the way the characters interact.
I think it was intentional, though.
I'm sure it was. I just, it was off-putting.
Do you guys watch the after show, like,
no,
a little making up?
Do that.
It's really good. Like I think it adds a lot of color to the episode. It actually points out differences between the games and the.
And the funny thing, my fiance has actually played the game, so it's kind of funny when she's like, "I remember this from the game," and there's other parts where she's like, "I don't know what this is from the game," but it's a very, very cool show. I was a little bit concerned. I was worried it was going to be very similar to The Walking Dead, and it's definitely very different, different tone to it, and just what's going on. Yeah, it's on HBO Max. I think there's only 9 episodes in the first season, though.
Well, we do have to remember someone that passed away recently, and we'll do it because Oscars didn't. But
what's up with that?
All right, so who we're about to talk about, I can kind of give him a pass for because this is what just happened. But when a pretty major star of one of the Best Picture nominees gets omitted, I think that's a kind of a mess up.
Yeah, she was in the Triangle of Sadness.
Right, which, like it or not, it was a Best Picture nominee, and they didn't mention.
And she was like one of the probably top billed like 4 characters in the movie.
But anyway, and then
they do have on the In Memoriam now that they got that little like barcode at the bottom that says
a QR thing,
yeah, to see if anybody else that might be on there, you can see him. Oh, that's... So you know that's because immediately they're getting on there and checking Twitter. Who did we miss? And
well, I saw Mira Sorvino was on Twitter really livid that they didn't put her dad on there.
Yeah,
they didn't put Paul Sorvino.
No. He did not. No,
that dude sliced garlic with a razor blade.
He did. And they didn't put Anne Heche either.
And he starred in movies.
Anne Heche and Paul Sorvino, I can't forgive that. Those are major Hollywood actors.
Right.
I can't believe they left them off. And this guy.
Tom Sizemore, who passed away recently.
61.
Brain aneurysm.
Yeah.
I celebrate the man's whole catalog.
Honestly,
Red Planet?
Yeah, that's not... It's not bad. A great cast, I'll say that. But like, Natural Born Killers, he's so good. Oh my
Saving
God,
Private Ryan.
Black Hawk Down.
Yeah.
Heat, when he gives the fuck around and find out face in the diner. That's just, he's so good.
How about his awesome scene in Point Break? When he's pouring beer on cereal.
You know what's funny? Like when he passed away, that was one of the most shared like clips that I saw was his scene in Point Break of everything he's done.
He's really good in True Romance too.
And a movie that I still say to this day was Before His Time was Strange Days, and he was so good in that.
But didn't a lot of people always confuse him and Michael Madsen?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I could see them confusing
him. I guess. I would never.
But
because neither one of them are really like leading men for the most part, and they're just both kind of that kind of gruff, tough guy kind of.
And like one, like I think at the same time, Tom Sizemore did The Relic, and Michael Madsen did Species. But he was really good at playing military guys. Like, he's actually one good thing I'll say about Pearl Harbor was...
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot he was
He was actually pretty good in Pearl Harbor. But,
he's one of those actors who I wish, you know, someone with talent would write a role specifically for him to be a leading... Because he's always a supporting actor.
I mean, he had some personal demons, but I mean, a lot of people do. But it was...
It's Hollywood, man. Yeah. Everybody's got problems.
But, you know, he was...
He was a great talent.
Yeah. Like, I love that Saving Private Ryan when he packs the sand and from France and in his bag at all the countries.
A brilliant little thing that tells you everything about that character just by doing that one thing.
And he was going to shoot Eddie Burns in his mouth.
Because he's got a big mouth.
Because I don't like him.
That's right. He had the best scream, too. He yelled really good.
So yeah, you will be missed. And now it is time to nominate this week's Awesome Village. Gentlemen, who are your nominees and why?
I'm going to nominate Lady Gaga. She blew everybody away a couple weeks ago at the Oscars. She's about to be in the sequel to Joker.
Playing Harley Quinn.
A few years ago, she did a very kind gesture at the Oscars, helping out...
Lucille, too. Liza
Minnelli, yeah. She was helping her out, like, and just...
You said Lucille, too, and that's all I could think
of. Just showed how what a kind soul she is, and, I mean, she's won an Oscar for her performance Shallow from A Star Is Born. She's just a fantastic talent, and her performance at the Oscars this year just blew me away. Just no glam, no glitz, just...
She sang the hell out of that
song. Motherfucking hell out of that song from Top Gun Maverick, so that's my pick.
I'm going to go with Bella Ramsey. I thought she was... We keep talking about Pedro Pascal, who is, you know, awesome in that show. But, I mean, she's kind of the heart of the show. The Last of Us. I'll keep wanting to say This Is Us.
Don't say that. We don't watch that show.
I think more people died in that show, from what I understand. than
that would be a funny spoof if you did This Is the Last of
this
Us.
This Is the Last of Us. But, yeah, I mean, the only other thing I'd ever seen her before was when she was, like, little Lady Mormont in Game of Thrones. And she kind of stole her scenes in that.
Every scene she was in.
Every scene she was in. And, yeah, I mean, she's kind of the heart and soul of the show. Because she's, you know, she's funny, but it's also, you know, she's still the kind of young girl who doesn't really know what's going on. And she's trying to put on a brave face, but she's clearly just terrified of everything that's going on around her. And I think she does a great job of pulling that off.
Okay, I was bouncing back and forth between two, but I'm going to say Ke Huy Quan. I love that this child actor is, he's just, his resurgence, it's so heartwarming, and he just seems so genuine every time when he talks about, and I love it that he mentions the Goonies, and he mentions Indiana Jones, and all these things, and he's just, all his speeches throughout this whole award season have been so heartwarming and lovable, and just the way he goes up and he hugs Harrison Ford, and he's just so excited, and he was really, really good. You can say what you will about Everything Everywhere All at Once, but he was fantastic in that movie.
He was.
And I can't say enough about him, so I'm going to go with Ke Huy Quan. I love the little guy.
And I'm going to go with a person who had two entries in this week's episode, Mr. Pedro Pascal, because I don't bet against The Mandalorian or Joel. I think, you know, it's kind of funny, like the meme you talked about earlier, as well as you talked about the description of one of the clips I actually saw of all the people that would have to fight to get to the stage for Jimmy Kimmel. And even that little bitty nod, he's just effortlessly cool.
Yeah.
So,
and I mean, in the past couple of years, he's just really surfaced and everybody's talking about Pedro Pascal. But me and Ryan have been talking about Pedro Pascal for
Narcos.
How many years?
Y'all really have.
I mean, when Narcos first started, I mean, that was probably, what, 8 years ago?
And then he carried Narcos Mexico season one.
Yeah.
He didn't come back for two and three. But
yeah. And then didn't Sarah Michelle Gellar share a clip of him on as being very young on Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Yep. He was also, you know, again, Oberyn Martell on Game of Thrones and has had a really good career and also very comedic.
Yeah.
His episode of SNL
was
season.
It was really
that
funny.
Was really good. But he has a, he's a 3-time Awesome Villager.
Yeah, well,
yeah. We love him. We know.
Yeah.
We know.
We celebrate the man's entire cast.
We do.
So, gentlemen, if you have to vote for someone other than your own, who would it be?
Well, I thought about this, and yeah, it's Ke Huy Quan.
Yeah, I have to go.
It's his week.
It's not even close. It's I hope he would be like.
I want to make it more suspenseful, but. You just want to hug the man. Every time I see the fucking guy, I just want to give him a big hug.
Same. I mean, it was like the first speech of the night, and then we were all crying.
It was like Edward Scissorhands, he making me cry. the very beginning of it. And like Ariana DeBose was like, she wasn't the only one that was in tears after he...
And I just love when the camera went to Spielberg, he just looked so proud.
Yeah.
And I mean, I just love the story of him coming back.
And when he referred to Chunk as his Goonie brother for life.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Shit, I forgot that he... Yeah, he's in The Goonies.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's Data.
And Chunk is now an entertainment lawyer, and he... Glenn told me this. He had to like, do all kind of paperwork to get back into acting when he got this role or whatever, so his entertainment lawyer is Chunk.
So that's what the two directors, the Daniels, they said that we can't believe that in order to hire Data, we have to talk to Chunk.
Nice.
That's incredibly awesome. And
I would have voted for Lady Gaga, but...
So there you go.
So Ke Huy Quan, come hang out with us. Tell us
why
about...
Why do I feel he actually would?
He would. He'd have a good time. So it's been another fun week, but we got to kind of wind down. So remember, there are many places to find us. Anchor Podcasts, Google Podcasts, a host of other platforms. Well, actually now it's Spotify Podcast. And as always, you can listen to us on theawesomevillage.com, where when you do help us out. This has been Greg.
Ryan.
John.
Glenn.
We will see you next week.